kindly forgive the dead air, folks. It's 3:01 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting at 101.3 on your FM dial, streaming live at freakradio.org. Please keep that in mind. If you happen to be listening to us on your everyday old-fashioned radio, you can always catch us on your little pewter on the World Wide Web, www.frekradiofreakradio.org. This is the Mideast Madness Show. I'm Ren Tawil. Just throwing a very minor temper tantrum because I thought my cool edit program was working, but alas, it's working now and we are being recorded. Again, this is Mideast Madness for June the 10th, 2013, in case you are listening, whether you know it or not, to a refeed at a later time and or date, or if you have tuned into radioforall.net, Indie Bay, Santa Cruz, or wherever else this recording might have wound up. This is a live show for June 10, 2013. It is 3:02 p.m. I am the Palestinian American offering my two-hour viewpoint of what's really going on out there. This is an anti-Semitism zone free. Did I say that right? No anti-Semitism here. No anti-Arabism, anti-Muslimism, or any of that. I endeavor to get to the truth with minimum undue slant, but I'm not denying that my show is full of my sentiment as a Palestinian American on the subject. We're going to talk about the conflict between Israelis and Palestinian Arabs, or perhaps between Israelis and other Arabs. Putting on my glasses here. Before we get to the meat of the show, there is a vital public service announcement I need to get out. It falls under the category of public service announcement generally, but it has everything to do with the Free Radio Santa Cruz service. Free Radio Santa Cruz is presenting Henry Kaiser, Rick Walker, and Bill Walker, Stringmasters, performing a benefit concert for Free Radio this Saturday, June 15th, at 8 p.m. at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. For those who need to be reminded or refreshed, the Resource Center for Nonviolence in Santa Cruz is at 612 Ocean Street, the main drag over there. 612 Ocean Street. Tickets are still available online for only $10. Keep in mind, this is a donation-friendly benefit for us here on Free Radio. Go online to brownpapertickets.com for your $10 discount. At the door, tickets will be, as it says on the poster, $15 to $101.3. That's a cute little reference to our appearance on the FM dial at 101.3. Sliding scale donation, but we're asking a minimum of $15 at the door. At 8 p.m., 612 Ocean Street, Again, this Saturday, June 15th, I can't say it often enough. They have a lovely auditorium there at the RCNB in their new building. And you really ought to come take a listen, visit, meet the radio personalities, meet me. You know I'm going to be there. It also happens to be my birthday. And also is the one-year anniversary of having my kidney stone removed. So that all makes it an extra big event. Benefit for Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'll give you the details again at least two times more in the coming hour and 50 minutes, roughly. Let me go ahead and give you the phone numbers. Both lines direct to this studio for a live talk with me, Ren. My name is Ren, R-E-N, short for Lawrence. Area code 831 for both these phone numbers. Line 1 is 427-3772. Again, line 1, 427-3772. If you prefer even numbers or like to come in second or however you view it. Line number 2 is 469-3119. 469-3119. Same 831 area code. Please talk to me, folks. There is a wonderful organization of good, honest, upright, mostly Jewish people entitled Jewish Voice for Peace, JVP. Jewish Voice for Peace is an entirely pro-justice, pro-truth organization centered in the East Bay of the San Francisco Bay Area in California. JVP is one of many, many Jewish groups and Jewish American groups that allow themselves in their honesty in the pursuit of justice to be strongly anti-Israeli policy. Many of them are Israeli citizens. Of course, as far as the nation of Israel is concerned, all Jews everywhere are automatically citizens of the state of Israel. But I'm talking about people who, by and large, are American citizens, many of whom also actively or indirectly have dual citizenship with Israel slash United States of America. Some of them are even Zionists. They believe in the Zionist dream. But what unites them in their effort to bring truth and justice to everyone in that region, Palestinians and Israeli Jews alike, is they're not afraid to call Israel to the carpet, to put their feet to the fire and talk about things that those who support Israel or think they're supposed to support Israel are often afraid to go there. Forgive the sentence structure. JVP offers a number of web services, which is to say different subscriptions to their email services. One that I've tied into very recently is called Muzzle Watch. Muzzle Watch, as the name infers, the purpose of Muzzle Watch is to keep an eye on any efforts, whether it's in the media, the government, personalities, whoever, to stifle open and honest debate about the Israeli-Arab situation. I have 3 recent pieces from Muzzle Watch. Let me just check Cool Edit here. I like to see that it's running. Good. Very good. And okay. Here, let's start with Who's the Hypocrite? This service, by the way, is through Feedblitz. The service is called Muzzle Watch, brought to you by Jewish Voice for Peace. I have, in recent shows, spoken about the fact that physicist Professor Stephen Hawking has come out and openly declared that he will not be attending a president's forum in Israel. This president referring to Shimon Peres, president of Israel. The real leader, of course, is the prime minister, who happens to be Benjamin Netanyahu. But that's by the by. Not terribly important. The point is, Hawking announced a few weeks ago that he is boycotting, refusing to show up, after all, as he had originally arranged to be a part of this presidential forum in Tel Aviv, I believe, in Israel. But Professor Hawking's come out and said he's not going to participate. And entirely, without surprise, the walls came crashing in on Mr. Hawking and his reputation. Immediately labeled as an anti-Semite because he recognizes that... Because he recognizes the lack of parity between the rights of Israelis and the rights of Palestinians, both inside Israel and in the militarily occupied territories. He doesn't like how the Israelis treat the Palestinians, particularly to the end of the Palestinians' desire to form their own independent, peaceful state. He has based his conclusions largely on his advisors from that part of the world, Arab and Jewish alike. As I said, people started calling him an anti-Semite and saying very cruel, nasty things about him and his physical infirmity. Some very off-colored criticisms and descriptions of him. The man has, multiple sclerosis? I'm sorry, maybe I'll have the exact name of his physical infirmity in here, but people pretty much are aware that Professor Stephen Hawking is confined to a wheelchair, has no voice of his own, only his electronically modified voice. Okay, from Muzzle Watch, this is written by Marilyn Kleinberg Niemark. Who's the Hypocrite? The latest here from JVP about Professor Stephen Hawking. The rush to denounce the renowned British physicist Stephen Hawking for withdrawing from the 5th annual Israeli presidential conference in order to protest Israel's treatment of the Palestinians should have run its course in early May, flaring up as these things do, and then simmering down until Israel's purported defenders stir up the next flap. But a cartoon in the foreword, this is the Jewish foreword, published in the United States, cartoon by Ellie Valley, reignited the frenzy. Valley was responding to the hypocrisy he observed in right-wing Zionist charges that Hawking was a hypocrite. Their criticisms followed the usual script familiar to readers of Muzzle Watch, which is to say accusations of smug self-righteousness, the usual fulminations of Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz is a United States lawyer, a Jew, who is, oh, he is like super Israeli, super Zionist, superhero for those who consider themselves on the Israeli side of the fence. Alan Dershowitz is, in my opinion, essentially a shill and a front man for the Netanyahu government. Anyway, that's who Alan Dershowitz is. Continuing with the article. But the railing took on a particularly cruel cast, given Hawking's physical condition. Quote, Hawking's decision to join the boycott of Israel is quite hypocritical for an individual who prides himself on his whole intellectual accomplishment. His whole computer-based communications system runs on a chip designed by Israel's Intel team. I suggest if he truly wants to pull out of Israel, he should also pull out his Intel Core i7 from his tablet, end quote, said Nitzana Darshan Leitner of Surat Hadin. I imagine Surat Hadin could be the name of a settlement or a publication in Israel. If it's a settlement, I'm talking about an illegal settlement in the occupied Palestinian territories. This from a news story in The Guardian. Along with this, among other examples collected by Mondeweiss online news service, we have from the settler news service Arutz Shiva, quote, Professor Hawking certainly knows that researchers at Tel Aviv University have launched clinical trials on a revolutionary new technology intended to protect the human brain from neurodegenerative disorders, such as the one from which the famous scientist suffers, and that at Ben-Gurion University, they have found an enzyme that so far delays Lou Gehrig's disease in mice. So perhaps Professor Hawking has a very advanced form of Lou Gehrig's disease. Continuing with the quotation, would Professor Hawking boycott a possible Israeli breakthrough in treating the disease? Or more to the point, would Professor Hawking ever survive in any Arab country or under the Palestinian autocracy he shamefully defends? Quotation continues, while in the Arab world, disabled people have been called the invisibles because they are segregated and hidden from the public eye, Israel's work with illness and disabilities would merit a book in itself. End quote. From the Arutz Shiva News Service. Once again, I am reading from a JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace, subscription service piece from Muzzle Watch entitled Who's the Hypocrite? And this is written by Marilyn Kleinberg Nymark. Who's the hypocrite? Okay, continuing with this article. That was apparently too much for Ellie Valley, who weighed in on May 14. Now, of course, folks, we're talking here about a cartoon. A not so terribly flattering drawing, black and white, cartoonish drawing of Professor Hawking in his wheelchair attached to his communications device, etc. The cartoon is entitled A Brief History of Hawking's Hypocrisy. And Ellie Valley, who, remember now, he is being critical of Hawking's, of the people who criticize Professor Hawking. If Stephen wants to boycott Israel, maybe it's time he boycotted some other things too. And then the list of suggestions, a little box pointing to his computer that he has facing him and through which he communicates. It says, computer, Hawking communicates via an Intel Core i7 chip designed in Israel. Next box, research. Hawking's work relies on particle accelerators innovated by Israeli technology. Next item, eyeglass hinges. Hinges were pioneered in King Solomon's temple without whom without which goggles would be the norm today. Teeth contain phosphorus. Israel is a global leader in white phosphorus technology. White phosphorus, let me remind everyone, of course, refers to the terrible substance used in bombs that Israel dropped on the population of Gaza in the massacre of 2008-29 and the one last year, last November. This is sort of the current version of napalm, in that the bomb explodes, kills or injures people in the blast, causes great property damage, and leaves a layer of this white phosphorus stickiness on the skin of those it contacts, burning them. And those that it doesn't kill are left with this infirmity, painful infirmity for life. Many children suffered and died under Israel's white phosphorus attacks in the Gaza Strip, the whole time with Gaza not having its own air force or ground-to-air missile defense system to protect themselves. Back to the cartoon. Hair. Samson protected Israel with his hair. Hair would not exist without Samson. Electricity. Benjamin Franklin experimented with electricity using a kite. Eilat is the kite-surfing capital of the world. And then a box pointing to his you-know-what says, probably circumcised. You're welcome. Sexuality. Whether he's gay or not, Tel Aviv is the mecca of homosexual culture / cuisine. By the way, Israel invented hummus. I kind of highly doubt that. Little box pointing with an arrow pointing to his arm. Air. Hawking exhales carbon dioxide, a gas pioneered by SodaStream, trademark, scientists in Samaria. By the way, Samaria refers to, I believe, the northern half of the Israeli-occupied part of the West Bank. And they're making SodaStream in those illegal settlements, expropriating minerals, water, and land, which properly belongs to the Palestinian people. Palestinians get no profit from this activity. Boycott SodaStream. And atoms discovered by Irgun militia leader, Hebron resident, and Ariel University professor Albert Einstein. The Irgun militia leader is total crap. It's an out-and-out lie. Professor Albert Einstein, the late Albert Einstein, did not participate in the uprooting of Palestinians and the killing of Palestinian Arabs in 1948 or at any time. And then finally, in huge, big, awful-looking letters, Jews invented the wheel. Hate Jews, don't use wheels. Okay, these are the details of what you cannot see over the radio or over the World Wide Web. Ellie Valley's cartoon. Now we'll continue with the article. No attempt at satire goes unpunished by Israel's defenders. In an op-ed with the heading, What's a Pro-Boycott Cartoon of Stephen Hawking Doing in a Jewish Paper? The Forward Should Defend Israel, Not Hypocritical Attackers, end quote. I'll read that again, just so we know what we're talking about. No attempt at satire goes unpunished by Israel's defenders. In an opinion editorial with the heading, quote, What's a Pro-Boycott Cartoon of Stephen Hawking Doing in a Jewish Paper? The Forward Should Defend Israel, Not Hypocritical Attackers, end quote. Columnist Hillel Halkin writes, and then he writes, A cartoon that ignores this fact, one implying that Hawking's disinclination to commit suicide is the main argument against him, is a cartoon that seeks to portray Hawking's critics as foolish and malicious. And since what Hawking is being criticized for is boycotting Israel, it is a cartoon that portrays opposition to the boycott as foolish and malicious as well. It is a pro-boycott cartoon. And in the foreword, is it really necessary to make the case in the pages of a Jewish newspaper that no Jewish newspaper, let alone the foreword, should allow the slightest expression of sympathy for the Israel boycott movement to appear in it? Is it necessary to insist on the inherently anti-Semitic nature of this movement? Is it necessary to observe that anti-Semitism should not be condoned, let alone promoted by the Jewish press? Apparently it is. End of Hillel Halkin's quote from his column. The Muzzle Watch article continues, and so here we have it again. For the discourse police, any expression of sympathy for boycott, divestment, and sanction, BDS, is anti-Semitic. Full stop. Well, not quite. In an op-ed, quote, defending my Stephen Hawking cartoon, Valley, the cartoonist and author of the words in the cartoon, expresses surprise that, quote, Hawking is such a vociferous opponent of boycotts. He himself is proposing a boycott of views deemed by his own criteria to be inappropriate for Jews to see, read, and hear. He goes on, Valley goes on, Hawking's Jeremiad does not appear in a vacuum. It comes at a time when many of America's major Jewish institutions debate the limits of free expression about Israel. It is an unfortunate paradox of Zionism that a movement created to safeguard Jewish sovereignty has led to so much fear and anxiety about Jewish thought. Now Hawking appears eager to apply these rules to yet another pillar of communal vitality, the exchange of ideas in the media. He claims that a Jewish newspaper should only be permitted to talk about certain things. This proposal is a far greater threat to Jewish life than any movement of political protest. It's time to stop losing our patience and open thought and discussion. It's time to stop losing our patience with open thought and discussion. It's time to start protest. It's time to stop losing our patience with open thought and discussion. It's time to start losing our patience with those who try to define, invariably through a political lens, what constitutes legitimate Jewish discourse. Enough with attempted boycotts of Jewish views, divestments from Jewish thought, and sanctions of Jewish opinion. In the Jewish community and culture that I treasure, there is a word to describe the movement to police and suppress Jewish expression. The word is shanda, and it means disgrace. End quotation. Hooray for the artists is the last sentence of this Muzzle Watch dispatch. Hooray for the artists. So, quite obviously, perhaps you could tell by the name, creator of the cartoon, critical of the hypocrites, Ellie Valley, is Jewish, and he, according to this article, sees a great deal of inherent hypocrisy by those who want to smash all efforts at BDS against the State of Israel, against Zionism, and to do so by squelching discussion, at least in Jewish newspapers, periodicals, to squelch Jewish intellectual thought itself. Okay. First piece from Muzzle Watch. Let's go back to... I have two other pieces through Muzzle Watch. Obviously, the emphasis of today's Mideast Madness show on Free Radio Santa Cruz is on this, the general subject of the attempt to suppress free and open discussion and debate about Israeli-Palestinian relations and Israeli-Arab relations. By the way, it's 3:31 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. This is the Mideast Madness Show, coming to you live, the June 10th, 2013 edition. Call me at 831-427-3772. Line number two is 469-3119. Let's go to something local. A few months ago, Pamela Geller, supporter of the racist Zionist State of Israel, who exercises, in my opinion, its own form of anti-Semitism in the form of anti-Arabism, as Arabs are Semites, just as Jews are. Began an ad campaign which took the form of posters on the sides of public transit in the city of San Francisco, California, in the United States. The first manifestation of this racist assault was a banner ad on the side and perhaps inside the transit, the Muni trolleys and buses, perhaps BART. Maybe not BART, though, since that's an inner city system. But on the Muni, the ad simply read, as I recall, "In a war between the civilized man and savages, support the civilized man. Support Israel, defeat jihad. Jihad, of course, is the Arabic word referring to struggle, whether it's in the form of physical conflict or internal mental and spiritual struggle. That's what jihad means. In the battle between civilized man and savagery, support the civilized man." Okay, that's the background of this situation. Here is the current situation. The Pamela Geller ads were responded to with pro-Palestinian, pro-justice ads, including one that had a series of four maps of Israel and Palestine from late 1947 to the present day, imagizing the loss of Palestinian land over the course of that 65-year period. Okay. San Francisco bus ads condemn Israeli apartheid. The backlash begins. American Muslims for Palestine launched an ad campaign this week on San Francisco buses condemning Israeli apartheid. And the ad, with a big red sky, either side bounded by pictures of the security wall separating Israel proper and its illegal Jewish settlements in Palestine from the rest of Palestine, decimating Palestinian society and land in the process. Pictures of the walls and the tower, lookout tower, very reminiscent of the former Berlin Wall in Berlin, Germany. Looks like an Israeli soldier is pointing a gun at the chest of a little boy who, half the soldier's size to begin with, is beginning to crouch. There is a quotation appears at the top. "I've been very deeply distressed in my visit to the Holy Land. It reminded me so much of what happened to us black people in South Africa," end quote. Nobel Prize winner Desmond Tutu. The Reverend Desmond Tutu, I believe. And the main message of the poster is, "Americans give Israel $3 billion per year. End apartheid now. Stop U.S. aid to Israel." And in very small letters in the corner of the of this poster, attribution is giving to AMP, the American Muslims for Palestine organization. Okay, so again, back to the text of the article. "American Muslims for Palestine launched an ad campaign this week on San Francisco buses condemning Israeli apartheid. Predictably, local branches of the Anti-Defamation League and the American Jewish Committee, as well as the Jewish Community Relations Council, immediately issued a statement, in effect, calling the ad hate speech for using the word apartheid. They have called on, and I quote, all civic, ethnic, and religious leaders who oppose bigoted lies and demonization to exercise their constitutional rights by condemning these inflammatory advertisements," end quote. Next is a line-by-line reading. Well, they didn't lay this out properly, so I'm going to read the article in the proper order. In response to that quotation from local Jewish organizations, "First, it's hard to know if the people who wrote this press release actually believe what they wrote. The points they make against the ad are so off the mark and often offensive, it's hard to believe anyone could write them sincerely." And then parenthetically it says here, "I'm deleting the names on the release because I don't think it's fair to blame them. I think people at the top should be held accountable for such nonsense." Okay. Now here essentially is a line-by-line reading of their media statement. Here is the release header of the Jewish organization's press release. "For immediate release, May 9th, 2013, contact XX, I guess they X'd out the name of the communications manager of the Jewish Community Relations Council, X'd out the name of the regional director, Anti-Defamation League. Title, Bay Area Jewish Community Condemns Deceptive Apartheid Ads. By the way, this is another Muzzle Watch dispatch coming from JVP, and the text of their dispatch says, "Saying something over and over again doesn't make it true. The Bay Area JCRC, that's the Jewish Community Relations Council, and local offices of the Anti-Discrimination League, the ADL, and the AJC, I'm sorry, American Jewish Committee, are not synonymous with the, quote, Bay Area Jewish community, end quote. In fact, while the Jewish Community Relations Council claims to represent Bay Area Jews, they won't release the number or names of groups they represent. That certainly makes one wonder if the number is embarrassingly small, and it's likely shrinking. There is no shortage of Jews around here from a wide political spectrum who would be appalled to be associated with an attack on a Muslim group for using a word that Israeli officials use regularly." More on that later. Back to the press release from the purported leaders of the San Francisco Jewish community. "San Francisco. Today, another misleading advertisement appeared in San Francisco targeting one segment of our community in an attempt to sow division in our city. The Bay Area's organized Jewish community strongly condemns the ad's deceitful claim that Israel is an apartheid state. Placed by American Muslims for Palestine, AMP, the ad is morally reprehensible as it employs inflammatory rhetoric designed to legitimize Israel's very existence. Return to Muzzle Watch comment. First, we see the predictable talking point about initiatives that seek to pressure Israel to abide by international law, seeking to, quote, divide the community. The irony, of course, is that actually the community is pretty united, certainly increasingly so. On campuses, for example, over and over again, you have a veritable rainbow of organizations backing these initiatives, including Christian, Jewish, Muslim, secular, Southeast Asian, Latino, African American, and so forth, all united, increasingly opposed to, quote, coalitions, end quote, of a handful of similar and non-diverse groups. And in parentheses, kind of like those United Nations votes for Palestinian rights, where nearly every country in the world stands on one side, and Israel, the U.S., Palau, and Micronesia, the latter two both island groups in the Pacific Ocean, stand on the other. This is the gist. The JCRC and ADL claim the ad is essentially a hate crime designed to delegitimize Israel's existence. This is the de facto talking point these days. It is intimidating language used for lack of a good argument. It goes like this. Question, isn't the occupation wrong? Answer, you want to destroy Israel. Question, doesn't it seem unfair that 93% of the land in Israel is reserved for Jews only? What about the 25% of non-Jews? Answer, you want to destroy Israel. It really doesn't matter what you say or do. The answer always is you really want to destroy Israel or delegitimize it, which is supposed to be a roundabout way to destroy Israel. Dig a little deeper, and according to the $6 million Israel Action Network, which openly spies on groups like Jewish Voice for Peace and provides talking points and strategy to defenders of Israeli government policy, the aim of delegitimization is to, quote, isolate Israel as a pariah state and reject the notion of a two-state solution, end quote. If that were at all true, you'd think they'd go after the original two-state solution killers, the settlers, the Israeli government, and Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister, whose party openly opposes a two-state solution. But nary a peep. Their harsh condemnations are reserved only for those trying to end Israel's ongoing violations of international law. Wet my whistle here. Oh, that stuff's going to wreck my tummy. Says here, back to the next paragraph of the press release. The ad's false claims diminish the suffering of the millions of people who were truly subjected to apartheid. The term apartheid describes the systematic oppression of the racial majority population of South Africa's minority through comprehensive racial discrimination. I'll start reading this rather complicated paragraph again from the press release. The ads false claims diminish the suffering of the millions of people who were truly subjected to apartheid. The term apartheid, and that's APARTHEID, from the Afrikaans language developed by the whites in South Africa, describes the systematic oppression of the racial majority population by South Africa's minority through comprehensive racial discrimination. Of course, South Africa's minority were white Europeans, primarily Dutch and British, and perhaps some Germans. In sharp contrast to apartheid South Africa, Israel is a diverse, democratic country that affords equal political and civil rights to all its citizens. Muzzle Watch's comment. Israeli human rights groups have much to say about the very unequal apportioning of rights to Israel's non-Jewish citizens. But why bother to argue the obvious? Instead, let's just take one of the organizations behind this press release that defines apartheid for South Africans. Because really, how dare Archbishop Tutu do so? Michelle Goldberg wrote in the Daily Beast about the ADL, Anti-Defamation League's moral standing on defining South Africa, describing the New York Times' Sasha Polakoff-Sharansky's no relation to the writer of this Muzzle Watch piece, writing on the issue. Michelle Goldberg said, in the 1980s, at a time when Israel maintained close ties with South Africa, the ADL went on the attack against Nelson Mandela's African National Congress, as New York Times' Sasha Polakoff-Sharansky reported in his recent book, The Unspoken Alliance, Israel's Secret Relationship with Apartheid South Africa. ADL National Director Nathan Perlmutter co-authored an article implying that the ANC was, quote, totalitarian, anti-humane, anti-democratic, anti-Israel, and anti-American, end quote. The Anti-Defamation League sent spies into the American anti-apartheid movement, as well as other movements critical of right-wing American foreign policy. Eventually, the organization was surveilling much of the American left. In 1993, a California police raid on the offices of the ADL and one of its investigators yielded files on Greenpeace, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, ACT UP, New Jewish Agenda, the Center for Investigative Reporting, and several Democratic politicians, among hundreds of others. The ADL eventually settled a class action lawsuit brought by several of its targets. And one more time, I will clarify, I'm reading from a dispatch from the Jewish Voice for Peace's subscription service Muzzle Watch, entitled San Francisco Bus Ads Condemn Israeli Apartheid, The Backlash Begins. And indeed, this is written by Cecily Sharansky of Jewish Voice for Peace. Getting close to the end here. As I said, Michelle Goldberg reported that the Anti-Defamation League eventually settled a class action lawsuit brought by several of its targets. The ADL apparently had no problem with apartheid South Africa when it existed, but now they claim authority to dispute the many South Africans, including Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who decry the many similarities between that regime and Israel's occupation. The Jewish community leaders, so-called leaders, release again. Back to the release again. We hope for a just and lasting peace between Israelis and Palestinians and an end to the suffering on both sides. In stark contrast, AMPs, that's the American Muslims for Palestine, apartheid rhetoric is profoundly misleading and harms good faith efforts toward a peaceful resolution based on two states for two people. Locally, the campaign promotes polarization and division among San Franciscans, who pride themselves on fostering strong interethnic and interreligious relations. And then, in parentheses, for a detailed report outlining AMP's established record of using false, biased, and offensively anti-Israel materials, please visit, and then they give the website. And, of course, I'm going to throw in that, according to these so-called Jewish community leaders, they apparently are the ones who establish, quote-unquote, this record of AMP using false, biased, and offensive material. And I'm still inserting here. And this, accusations of the promotion of polarization and division among San Franciscans, which all started as the brainchild of one Pamela Geller, who made a very nebulous and stark contrast between the so-called civilized man and the so-called savages in her offending and racist poster, which for which curiously was allowed to appear on city buses, on the city transit system. The reason, by the way, why the San Francisco Transit Authority's people allowed it is because they have a general policy permitting political advertisements which are not threatening or obscene by anyone. So that's how that situation was even founded. Okay, continuing with Jewish community so-called leaders press release. The Jewish community has long stated our concern that the repeated appearance of offensive anti-Israel and anti-Muslim ads is making our public transit system a battleground for the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. While protected by the First Amendment, extremist language directed at any group has no place in our city. We call upon all civic, ethnic, and religious leaders who oppose bigoted lies and demonization to exercise their constitutional rights by condemning these inflammatory advertisements. The apparent end of the release. And I know I used that phrase earlier. I can't see or remember exactly where. Okay. Muzzle Watch Dispatch continues. Finally, here's the heart of the matter. If calling American Muslims for Palestine's use of the term apartheid is, as the release describes it, misleading, inflammatory, divisive, offensive, and bigoted, where's the AGC's, ADL's, and JCRC's outrage about these Israelis who have used the same term to describe the occupation? Surely they didn't miss these statements, as attuned as they are to the A word, apartheid. But once again, it's perfectly all right for high-ranking Israelis to regularly use the word apartheid, but it's not okay for Muslims to do so? What kind of message about bigotry does that send? Now, here are 10 quotations, all using the A word. This is highly revealing. Quotation from former Israeli Foreign Ministry Director General, Ambassador to South Africa, Alon Liel, former Israeli Foreign Minister. Quote, if you, President Obama, intend to come here for a courtesy visit, don't come. Don't come. We don't need you here for a courtesy visit. You cannot come to an area that exhibits signs of apartheid and ignore them. That would simply be an unethical visit. You yourself know full well that Israel is standing at the apartheid cliff. If you don't deal with this topic during your visit, the responsibility will, at the end of the process, also lie with you. From this year, 2013, Mr. Liel is admonishing the United States president from paying what apparently Obama called a courtesy visit because he didn't want to see an obstruction of justice and blatant hypocrisy committed by our president. Next quote, Israeli Defense Minister and former Prime Minister Ehud Barak. Quote, as long as In this territory west of the Jordan River, there is only one political entity called Israel. It is going to be either non-Jewish or non-democratic. If this bloc of millions of Palestinians cannot vote, that will be an apartheid state, end quote. That from 2010. Next quote. Former Israeli Minister of Education Yossi Sarid. What acts like apartheid, is run like apartheid, and harasses like apartheid is not a duck. It is apartheid. What should frighten us, however, is not the description of reality, but reality itself. The Palestinians are unfortunate because they do not have, because they have not produced a Nelson Mandela. The Israelis are unfortunate because they have not produced an F.W. de Klerk. That from 2008. This quotation from 2007 by former Israeli Minister of Education, another former Israeli Minister of Education, Shulamit Aloni. Jewish self-righteousness is taken for granted among ourselves to such an extent that we fail to see what's right in front of our eyes. It's simply inconceivable that the ultimate victims, the Jews, can carry out evil deeds. Nevertheless, the state of Israel practices its own quite violent form of apartheid with the native Palestinian population. Another quotation from 2007. This time, chimes in Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. If the day comes when the two-state solution collapses and we face a South African-style struggle for equal voting rights, also for the Palestinians in the territories, then, as soon as that happens, the state of Israel is finished. Same year, 2007, Israeli newspaper Haaretz editorial. Quote, the de facto separation is today more similar to political apartheid than an occupation regime because of its constancy. One side, determined by national, not geographic association, includes people who have the right to choose and the freedom to move and a growing economy. On the other side are people closed behind the walls surrounding their community who have no right to vote, lack freedom of movement, and have no chance to plan their future. Haaretz newspaper editorial. And here comes former Israeli Attorney General Michael Ben-Yair. Quote, in 1967, we enthusiastically chose to become a colonial society, ignoring international treaties, expropriating lands, transferring settlers from Israel to the occupied territories, engaging in theft, and finding justification for all these activities. Passionately desiring to keep the occupied territories, we developed two judicial systems, one progressive liberal in Israel, and the other cruel, injurious in the occupied territories. In effect, we established an apartheid regime in the occupied territories immediately following their capture. That oppressive regime exists to this day. That was said 11 years ago, 2002, by then-Attorney General Michael Ben-Yair. Here's a quotation from the Israeli human rights group, B'Tselem. Quote, Israel has created in the occupied territories a regime of separation based on discrimination, applying two separate systems of law in the same area, and basing the rights of individuals on their nationality. This regime is reminiscent of distasteful regimes from the past, such as the apartheid regime in South Africa. Again in 2002. In the year 2000, let's hear what former Israeli admiral and Knesset member Ami Ayalon said. Israel must decide quickly what sort of environment it wants to live in, because the current model, which has some apartheid characteristics, is not compatible with Jewish principles, end quote. And that was said 13 years ago. The admiral said Israel must decide quickly what sort of environment it wants to live in. And he said that 13 years ago. In 2000, he declared that the current model has some apartheid characteristics. And yet, American Jewish groups, quote-unquote, or the purported leaders of Jewish, of the American Jewish people, are still screaming, kicking and screaming about the legitimacy of using the word apartheid and applying it to Israel. 13 years later, I'm very happy that the admiral pointed out that this oppressive environment that Israel creates against the Palestinians is not compatible with traditional Jewish principles. Finally, virtual founder of the modern Israeli state, David Ben-Gurion, the very first prime minister of Israel. This is a quotation that has been cited by him. Quote, Israel, he said, better rid itself of the territories and their Arab population as soon as possible. If it did not, Israel would soon become an apartheid state, end quote. This quotation is from the year 1967, the year of the terrible Six-Day War in the late spring of 67, started by Israel. And the quotation was cited in Hirsch Goodman in 2005, 8 years ago. Essentially, that is the end of the dispatch, but I want to point out there's actually something else to read here because there was, let's go back to the paragraph that says, the one following this imaginary interview-like Q&A that's going on. Question, isn't the occupation wrong? Answer, you want to destroy Israel. Question, doesn't it seem unfair that 93% of the land in Israel is reserved for Jews only? What about the 25% of non-Jews? Answer, you want to destroy Israel. And then Sharansky says, it doesn't really matter what you say or do. The answer always is, quote, you really want to destroy Israel, end quote, or delegitimize it, which is supposed to be a roundabout way to destroy Israel. Dig a little deeper, and according to the $6 million Israel Action Network, which openly spies on groups like Jewish Voice for Peace, and then Sharansky puts an asterisk. What is she talking about? Spies on groups like JVP. Here is the footnote. Asterisk. When my organization, Jewish Voice for Peace, recently launched a pro-divestment website, rabbisletter.org, that's rabbisletter.org, as part of a high-profile Methodist and Presbyterian church divestment votes, we were stunned when just 24 hours later, the Israel Action Network launched rabbisletter.org, an anti-divestment website. Okay, folks, I don't see the difference either in the spelling. Let's just finish up. We looked into it further, and they had registered their site name just 45 minutes after we registered rabbisletter.org. Aha! There is no spelling difference. The group, a project of the Jewish Federations of North America and the Jewish Council of Public Affairs, which my family and many others have given much money to in the past, had gone to the effort of using perfectly legal means of spying on our activities. Spies, thieves, and shills everywhere. This dispatch was brought to us, including all those portions of the ADL, etc., press release that she read, by Cecily Sharansky of Jewish Voice for Peace. All right, my friends, it's 5 minutes after 4. 1605 hours Pacific Daylight Time. On the west coast of North America, I want to remind everyone this Saturday, June 15th, is Free Radio's benefit. A benefit concert for Free Radio Santa Cruz featuring guitarist Henry Kaiser, Rick Walker, and Bill Walker. Here I am using the wrong part of my bifocals trying to read a poster across the room. Benefit concert for Free Radio Santa Cruz. More details at freakradio.org. Years of true community radio. This Saturday, June 15th, at 8 p.m., 8 o'clock in the evening, at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, 612 Ocean Street, Santa Cruz. Tickets are available online for $10. If you go now to brownpapertickets.com, again, that's the concert, the benefit concert for Free Radio Santa Cruz. $10 tickets, brownpapertickets.com. At the door, tickets will be a minimum of $15. We need to keep this radio service going, and we certainly have difficulties of a variety of categories. Actually, it's at the door, it will be a sliding scale donation of $15 to whatever. As it says in the poster, 15 to 101.3, as in 101.3 FM on your dial. USDs, US bucks. That is indeed a very wide sliding scale donation. Come get your money's worth. Come find out more about Free Radio. Have your questions answered and your answers questioned. Maybe engage in a little debate. You know, the Free Radio service is not just pontificators like yours truly here, Rentwheel, giving his clearly biased opinion about things. There's a lot of music, a lot of really weird stuff. Dennis does his From the Cream to the Dregs show, which includes a half hour of Earth First Update on Thursday nights. Robert Norse has two weekly programs, one on Thursday evening preceding Dennis's, and one Sunday late morning, I believe, sometime around noon. Robert Norse centers his discussions on the issue of homelessness in and around Santa Cruz, California. Lots of exciting true community radio, unhindered by the corporate twist ties of our hands behind our backs. Let's see, what... How about some Arabic music? Would you like that, kiddies? Yay! We want Arab music! Specifically Arab American music. Seven, that's a godly number. We want to keep in good with the man upstairs, right?
يوم لا يوم وانا بدور حظي ملون ابو العروس زعلان مني ام العروس ما تكلمني وانا خايف يصيبني ده جنون لاقول بيتنا اتجوز وبكون ممنون كناين وولادهم وضادين بس اليوم بدي وحدي مع امك دي امل هدي وانا قابله كيف ما كان يكون لقولي بيت يا حبايب وبكون ممنون
لقولي بيت لا اتجوز وبكون ممنون من يوم ليوم
شغل بالي هم البيوت يا ويلحالي وانا قابله كيف ما كان يكون لقولي بيت يا جماعة وبصير ممنون في الجرايد اعلانات صرنا حاطين عم نترجى ونتدخل يا رم بتعين في الجرايد اعلانات صرنا حاطين عم نترجى ونتدخل يا رم بتعين ما عاد فينا نستنى تنلاقي بيت ونتهنى وانا قابله كيف ما كان يكون لقولي بيت يا حبايب وبصير ممنون وين ما قدرنا نلاقي بدلا جمعتين شهر العسل بيمضى ونصفي فين خافوا الله عينونا يا ملاكين واستورونا وانا قابله كيف ما كان يكون لقولي بيت نتجوز وبصير ممنون
لقولي بيت لا
وبكون ممنون يوم ليوم وانا بدور حظي ملعون ابو العروس زعلان مني ام العروس ما تكلمني وانا خايف يصيبني ده جنون لاقول بيت يتجوز ويكون ممنون
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, and streaming live on the World Wide Web at freakradio.org. The Mideast Madness Show. I'll give the phone numbers again, but before I do, run and get your papers and pencils, if you haven't already done that. And I'll remind you that you can, if you don't want to call me, or was never inclined to call me to begin with during the show, you can send any other message to me. RSVP address blocked or not. You can email the show at MideastMadness@gmx.com. That's Mideast Madness. Mideast, not Middle East, but Mideast Madness, all one word, all lowercase. G is in gargantuan, M is in Machiavellian, X is in extra. Kinda, sorta. .com. That's the website for your personal messages to me. Yeah, I know. Like anyone would bother writing little old me. Let's get rid of this here. Yes, folks, I was playing solitaire on the computer. I thought I'd lost that program forever, but I found it. Dismiss the screen. I'm going to read at you a few items that I had prepared in recent weeks but had not gotten to. So we will turn away from the exclusive view of attempts to disrupt and squash and quash appropriate unhindered discussion about Israeli-Palestinian relations. Move away from that and now, I don't think, did I ever read this one to you about the drones? This is from May 19th of this year by Jilly Cohen from Haaretz News. This is Israel's oldest and most revered periodical, Haaretz. The word Haaretz, by the way, Haaretz means in the ancient Hebrew language the land, with a very strong reference to the land of Israel. But being such a revered Israeli newspaper, the oldest one the state has, going way back before the beginning of the state, excuse moi, Haaretz has some remarkably candid, open, and frankly left-wing viewpoints. Some of the most left-wing but civil commentators, editorialists, columnists that one can imagine. That periodical never ceases to astound me. Anyway, from the May 19th issue of Haaretz Online, Israel is world's largest exporter of drones, a study finds. In 8 years, Israel exported... Whoop, who was that? I just turned around in a panic to make sure I'm on the air here. In 8 years, Israel exported $4.6 billion worth of UAVs to countries ranging from Britain to India to Uganda. Again, by Gilly Cohen. Israel is the world's largest exporter of unmanned aircraft. So UAV, I guess, is unmanned. I don't know what it stands for. Israel is the world's largest exporter of unmanned aircraft in terms of the number of systems sold, a study has found. Over the last 8 years, Israel has exported $4.6 billion worth in U.S. dollars of unmanned aerial vehicles, according to a study by the... According to a study by the business consulting firm Frost & Sullivan, UAVs, or drones, constitute nearly 10% of Israel's total military exports. Unmanned equipment exports are a relatively volatile market. The report shows Israel had $150 million in UAV exports in 2008, a figure which increased substantially in 2009 to $650 million. That's $150 million. A year later, $650 million. Exports of the small surveillance planes peaked in 2010, a record year for drone sales, to $979 million. That was in 2010, three consecutive years. I'm here, folks. I'm just checking my phone system here to make sure it's ready for your calls. Call me at area code 831-427-3772. That's line one. Line two is 469-3119. Anyone may call for any reason, as past listeners have experienced, including station personnel who are telling me that they're going to be here or not be here. Coming to work or not. Calling in sick, whatever. The Eitan drone and air base. There was, I can't even see the picture now. Picture, supposed picture of an Eitan drone. Sales since dropped off. In 2011, exports of UAVs slumped to $627 million, and in 2012, they declined further to $260 million, which is only $110 million more than those initial figures I read to you in 08. Interesting. Frost and Sullivan notes that this last figure does not factor in a major deal signed with India for the upgrade of unmanned aircraft. If that deal were to be included, it would boost the average annual export figures in the sector by about $100 million. Israel's average overall military exports over the past 8 years have been about $6.1 billion a year. Overall military exports. UAVs constituted about $578 million of that figure. Israel is considered a powerhouse in the field of unmanned aircraft, primarily due to the Israel Air Force's impressive squadrons of UAVs. These include the Eitan, E-I-T-A-N, which boasts a wingspan of up to 26 meters. I believe that would be well over 30 yards. And the Hermes 450, which according to foreign reports can be armed to carry out targeted killings from the air. Just over half of Israel's UAV exports from 2005 through 2012 were to Europe, according to the report, with a particularly large number of aircraft supplied to Britain's Watchkeeper UAV program, a joint project of Israel's Elbit Systems and the French multinational firm Thales. Watchkeeper aircraft are based on the Elbit Hermes 450 UAV. Drones were also sold to Germany, Poland, the Netherlands, and Spain. A third of the exports from 2005 to 2012 were destined for the Asia-Pacific region, including Azerbaijan and India. That's quite a region, Asia-Pacific, considering Azerbaijan is just to the east of Armenia in the Caucasus. About 11% of the foreign sales, totaling $508 million, were to customers in South America. The United States accounted for a mere 3.9% of Israel's UAV export sales from 05 to 12. Customers in Africa, including Uganda, Ethiopia, and Nigeria, represented 1.5% of drone exports, about $69 million. Not all UAV exports were intended for military use, according to the report. Some equipment was reportedly sold for domestic security and for use in urban areas. And, of course, that is a major concern amongst Constitution-oriented USA citizens. There is a healthy debate, which is fairly new, but still quite strong, concerning the Fourth Amendment being secure in our persons, possessions, etc. Fourth Amendment of the Bill of Rights. Some equipment was reportedly sold for domestic security and for use in urban areas. Spies. Domestic security. One way or another, cameras. Very high-definition cameras. Continuing, continuing, Israel's overall military exports are expected to grow in the next few years. As Israeli firms continue to sign new orders with foreign customers, says Aaron Fluman, who leads Frost & Sullivan's Israel operations. Israel's unmanned aircraft are, meanwhile, being aggressively marketed in markets where demand is growing, such as Africa, the Asia-Pacific region, and South America, he said. Written by Pam Bailey. Even I was not aware that Israel was so involved in the UAV unmanned aircraft drone market, worldwide market. Okay. Got that out of the way. Let's return to our list of draft dispatches that I have. Now, I cannot remember if I ever got around to reading this. I think I did not, but it's a very important piece. And here it is, 29 minutes after 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time on the Mideast Madness Show, brought to you by Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, streaming live at freakradio.org. This is very disturbing, but not at all unexpected. It is, I neglected to put the word Mondawise on this copy, but I know it's Mondawise because I recognize its stock subtitle, The War of Ideas in the Middle East. From Mondawise, Israel cracks down on American travel to the West Bank by requiring tourists to obtain military permits. By Alex Kane on May 22, 2013. Israeli authorities have implemented another way to impede free access to the occupied Palestinian territories for American travelers. kindly bear with me. This particular copy is a mess. It has no paragraphical separations whatsoever. We're supposed to get to that. Okay. Israel cracks down on American travel to the West Bank by requiring tourists to obtain a military permit. Haaretz's Amira Haas reported over the weekend that Israel is now forbidding, quote, tourists from the United States and other countries to enter the territories under Palestinian Authority control without a military entry permit. But it does not explain the application process to them, end quote. Haas's report was published as opposition mounts to the Senate bill that grants Israelis free travel in the United States while also codifying Israel's practice of denying U.S. travelers entry on the basis of security concerns. That Senate bill exposes a galling aspect of the special relationship, quote-unquote special relationship. All the military aid and diplomatic support to Israel doesn't shield Americans from being routinely discriminated against based on their political affiliations or ethnic background. And Israel can count on the United States not putting up a fight. Having the whole Congress behind you means never having to think twice about these actions. The policy Haas exposes is yet another example of Israeli authorities' free rein at border crossings, which includes detaining, interrogating, and deporting Americans. Here are some of the details in the Haaretz report. Christian clerics from the United States told Haas they can't go meet Palestinians in the West Bank because they signed an official Israeli declaration at Ben-Gurion Airport stating that they need a special military permit to visit those areas. Their mistake, apparently, was that they were honest about wanting to visit the West Bank. The catch is that the Israeli authorities wouldn't explain to them how to get these permits. Haas provides the text of the document that the Christian cleric signed. 1. I understand that this permit is granted me for entry and visitation within Israel only, and it has been explained to me that I am unable to enter the areas under the control of the Palestinian Authority without advance authorization from the Territory Actions Coordinator, and I agree to act in accordance with these regulations. 2. I understand that in the event that I enter any area under the control of the Palestinian Authority without the appropriate authorization, all relevant legal actions will be taken against me, including deportation and denial of entry into Israel for a period of up to 10 years. Americans wishing to visit Israeli settlements in the West Bank do not have to sign such a document, an Israeli attorney told Haas. It's another element of Israel's crackdown on foreign travel in occupied Palestine. In January 2013, Haas reported that Israel renewed restrictions on foreigners already living in the West Bank by stamping their passports with the words Judea and Samaria. Don't want to lose my place here. The move, which was first revealed by the Electronic Intifada's Ali Abunima, aims to prohibit foreigners in the West Bank, some of whom are Palestinians who lived abroad or people who married Palestinians, from visiting East Jerusalem or Israel. The report on the Christian clerics notes that the practice of requiring tourists wishing to go to the West Bank to sign a declaration, quote, was discontinued and renewed only at the beginning of this year, end quote. But I had to sign a similar declaration, says this author Alex Kane. Perhaps not exactly the same one in January 2011. The background to why I had to sign an Israeli government document stating I would not go to the areas under the Palestinian Authority's control begins in early 2010. I joined a small delegation, part of the larger Gaza Freedom March, and entered the besieged territory to spend a few days there. Afterwards, I naively thought it was a good idea to try to enter Israel through the Taba border crossing to make my way to the other part of occupied Palestine I had not seen. I was denied entry. My assumption is that it was because I had been to Gaza. The next year, I flew into Ben-Gurion Airport to join a human rights delegation traveling through the West Bank. I had arrived with a brand new passport, but it was to no avail. Israeli authorities detained me at the airport and held me for a good 5 hours. They immediately knew I had been to Gaza in the past and wanted to go to the West Bank. And so I admitted that fact after initially concealing it. I was questioned by an Israeli official who told me he was a Ministry of Defense employee. He mentioned the word terrorism and wanted to know who I met with in Gaza. He asked me to write down the names of who I was going to meet in the West Bank. I scribbled down some names, but nothing that would truly reveal my friends. The interrogation occurred within the first hour I was there, and then 4 slow hours passed by with no word from Israeli authorities. At that point, I was steeling myself for the experience of deportation. But eventually, they asked me to come into a separate room. They furnished a piece of paper with a declaration similar to the one that the Christian clerics Haas reports on had to sign. I looked it over. By then, I was desperate to get out of Ben-Gurion Airport. It said that I will agree not to enter areas that the Palestinian Authority controlled. I signed it. And then I made my way to Ramallah. Ramallah, an Arab town in West Bank, Palestine. There was no way for Israel to enforce the declaration I put my name on. My experience could have been much worse. My whiteness probably had a lot to do with why I was not deported. This is Alex Kane talking. It was a very tiny slice of what people like Nur Joda went through. And the Senate bill being pushed by Barbara Boxer, California Senator Barbara Boxer, will give a red, white, and blue seal of approval to the Israeli crackdown on U.S. travel to the West Bank, which means that we can expect many more stories like Jodah's and the Christian clerics, with the U.S. not doing a thing about it. Again, this is a Mondo Ice article entitled Israel Cracks Down on American Travel to the West Bank by requiring tourists to obtain a military permit and not being told how to obtain the military permit, written by Alex Kane on May 22nd. I'm looking for the name Nur Joda. I didn't recognize it, didn't remember reading. Might refer to someone in another Mondo Weiss article. By the way, Alex Kane is an assistant editor for Mondo Weiss and the world editor for Alternet. Follow him on Twitter at Alex B. Kane. That's K-A-N-E. And now what's becoming a weekly tradition, the fun part, internet comments by readers. I have a few here. In this particular case, as of May 28, there were 45 comments on the article. Of course, I present far less. Going to grab another sip here. Mind you, anyone else doing a radio show, at least many other radio show people, generally will find it easier to take a drink of anything, be it water or flavored beverage, whatever, while they do music or do a commercial on commercial radio. Since I'm reading almost all the time, occasionally playing something from my compact discs, I have to break in with my swallowing of whatever my beverage happens to be. Okay. Internet article comments from readers. Ritzel, R-A-T-Z-L, on May 22nd, pipes in. I asked Hostage the other day. Hostage would be another commenter. I asked Hostage the other day about the, quote, cleverness of a possible strategy to get Israel to, quote, apologize, compensate, and also get referred to the ICC. That's the International Criminal Court of Justice. With the first two as at least contextual support for the third. He responded that it was a foreseeable cascade of triggered events that resulted in the referral. From Hostage's description, as always, if I understood it correctly, Israel failed to recognize, or didn't care, but I'm going with fail to recognize, that impending cascade of events and wound up in a lose-lose-lose situation. That failure seems pretty rare to me. Israel, et al., is usually right on top of those kinds of no-win situations. Sorry for the preamble, but this development also seems to be a case of Israel not being able to foresee the obvious. With the visa legislation on the bubble, this has to be a deal killer. They're killing something that would be to their great benefit, because why? They can't help themselves? Seafoid, another commenter, and many others have said it's only a matter of time before the wheels come off. Is it actually happening in real time? Thanks for the timely news and analysis, Ritzel says to author Alex Kane. Okay, I don't understand a lot of that either, and this person has a head full of stuff. A blah chick says, oh, she's quoting Ritzel's, when Ritzel said, they're killing something that would be to their great benefit, because why? They can't help themselves? Yep, that's pretty much the case. If you believe that the whole world hates you because you are a Jew, then it doesn't matter how you treat said world. They're going to hate you no matter what you say or do. This is how the Dersh was able to dismiss BDS movement as being motivated by nothing else but hatred of Jews. So if the world is going to hate them, then they'll go and do whatever they want. Also, I think they're a little power drunk as well. Citizen says, Barb Boxer's uniquely asymmetrical visa waiver bill is similar to the current IRS's uniquely asymmetrical targeting of small American conservative political groups. No doubt the latter implementation of IRS power helped Obama win his re-election because it delayed or denied approval, and no doubt Boxer's bill will discriminate against Americans critical of Israeli regime, just as Obama's IRS did to Americans critical of Obama regime. As a young adult during the 60s revolution and Nam War era protest and Nixon's Watergate, the current state of, quote, progressive U.S. and Israel fill me with fear. It sounds like that might be a reformed child of the 60s Democrat, but I could be wrong. Here is Just piping in, are you listening, Barbara Boxer, etc.? This is a clear example of vicious and accelerating apartheid. and probably a violation of international law. The Israelis want to hide the horror that they have created by occupation. They want to hide the truth. No humanitarian relief workers allowed. Now no humans allowed. P.S. And they say there is no occupation. Yes, indeedy. Blank State says, quoting a previous commenter, with the Vigil legislation on the bubble, this has to be a deal killer, end quote. Nope, no deal killer. Boxer's treasonous bias will stand unchallenged and the legislation will slide through, lubricated by the able machinations of AIPAC, that's the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, and our subservient and thoroughly bribed body politics. Ritzel, who we started the comments section with, comes in again and says, yeah, blank state. It was more of a plea, as in, simply must be, darn it, than more of a plea than an absolute. But I think it's still odd that Israel would put their own legislation, a key component of this year's AIPAC effort, at risk, even just a little, by offering up such starkly contradicting evidence in advantage of its passage. I think they're losing it. But then you might be right in that it just doesn't matter. But it's hard for me to go there. Dickerson 3870 chimes in. Regarding Haas report was published as opposition mounts to the Senate bill that grants Israelis visa-free travel to the U.S. while also codifying Israel's practice of denying U.S. travelers entry on the basis of security concerns, end quote. Said Alex Kane in the article. My comment, Dickerson 3870's comment, allowing Israel to join the visa waiver program would apparently mean that the most rabidly extremist Israeli settlers from the West Bank, who, by the way, perpetrate price tag attacks like setting fires to mosques, would be able to willy-nilly enter the United States without a visa. If that isn't a security threat to the U.S., then I don't know what the hell is. Suggested strategy? As a fallback position in the event Boxer's legislation advances, we should insist, at a bare minimum, that visa waivers should not be given to Israelis who reside outside the Green Line, which is to say outside pre-1967 Israel. In the occupied West Bank, including occupied East Jerusalem, or the occupied Golan Heights, in violation of international law. This would mean that any passport that Israel, or in the case of dual nationals, any other country participating in the visa waiver program, such as the U.S., the U.K., Australia, Canada, etc., provides to residents of the occupied West Bank, including occupied East Jerusalem or the occupied Golan Heights, would have to clearly indicate that the person was a resident of the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem or the occupied Golan Heights, also called the Golan Heights, and therefore was not eligible for a visa waiver under the visa waiver program. Let the Likudniks suck on that. Exclamation point times three. This particular batch of commenters seem to be well-versed in a lot of this stuff. I don't know half of what they're referring to. Once again, Ritzel says the following. Dickerson, if that isn't a security threat to the U.S., then I don't know what the hell is. My cynical view is that Israel provides most of our, quote, intelligence on security threats in the region. So, by and large, they determine who is a threat to the U.S. or not. Settlers, even violent ones, would therefore not be deemed a risk. Love your strategy. Sounds like something even a Beinart-style liberal Zionist could get behind. if they are actually serious about disenabling settlement viability. Next is a comment from a James Canning directed to Ritzel. The security threat posed by the illegal Jewish settlers in the West Bank is more of an indirect one. They provoke attacks by Muslims offended by foolish American support for the illegal Jewish colonies. Another short comment here from Bumblebee. You'll be disappointed / disgusted to learn that we Brits, as discovered by Craig Murray, seem to have the same problem regarding Israeli visitors to our green and soggy land. I'm sorry this isn't so short. I misread something. Link to craigmurray.org.uk. Quote, listen to this, folks. This is British law. Quote, from Hansard. Asked by Lord Werner to ask Her Majesty's government why Palestinians from the occupied Palestinian territories require a visa before traveling to the United Kingdom, but Israeli citizens living in the occupied Palestinian territories do not require a visa. To come to the United Kingdom for 6 months or less, HL 59, to ask Her Majesty's government what consideration has been given to changing immigration rules to restrict access to the United Kingdom by all Israeli citizens who live in the occupied Palestinian territories, HL 60. The Parliamentary Undersecretary of State, Home Office, Lord Taylor of Holbeach. Visa regimes are based on nationality, not place of residence. Palestinians are required to obtain a visa before traveling to the United Kingdom. Israeli citizens, regardless of where they reside, are able to visit the United Kingdom visa-free for up to 6 months. No consideration has been given to changing the immigration rules to restrict access to the United Kingdom by Israeli citizens who live in the occupied Palestinian territories. Visa regimes are kept under regular review. Okay. More very involved and apparently highly informed comments. We'll dispense with them. We're down to our last 2 minutes anyway. The important thing is we finished the Mondo Weiss article. This is something I've been anticipating for a long time. It's always, it had been a mystery to me how anyone other than the Israeli army could enter or exit freely the West Bank, which is to say, designated state of Palestine. How anyone could come and go there with Israel, of course, wanting to hide their human rights crimes, wanting to keep the world blindfolded over what goes on there until, of course, it was simply explained to me, well, Israel, if it wants to maintain its aura, its veneer of being a democratic society with at least some free movement, taking into account security concerns, if they want to maintain that veneer of freedom, then they have to allow outsiders to go visit the Palestinians. And even that degree of liberty amongst the citizens of the world is being drastically cut back by Israeli military and immigration authorities, the people who run Ben-Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv. And I just have a real strong feeling that the Israelis are getting what they've been wanting to get for a real long time. Once again, hiding behind this BS about security concerns, security for the state of Israel. Let's not have Israel swept under the rug. So we have complete freedom as the Israeli bosses, the ones with the guns, the big guns, and the Air Force's navies, they have the freedom and the power to restrict movement that much more, particularly if you're not an Arab or a Jew. Even if you are, say, an American Arab from Jewish Voice for Peace, you're going to find it really tough to go in and get the scoop on what's really going on in occupied Palestine. This is Ren's Wheel, the Mideast Madness Show. Please don't forget the big benefit for free radio this Saturday, June 15th, starting at 8 p.m. Concert starting at 8 p.m. at the Resource Center for Nonviolence on Ocean Street in Santa Cruz. Tickets at brownpapertickets.com. $5 off if you get them online. But, of course, we're looking not necessarily only for huge dollops of money, but how about huge dollops of supporters coming in through the doors to share the joy with us this Saturday, 8 p.m. Mideast Madness. Write to me at MideastMadness@gmx.com. Talk at you next week. Here is Palestine Today.